News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 28th of May, Anno Domini 2006, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, 76 degrees under, and you have to admit, they're cornflower blue skies today.
Yes, definitely. Gorgeous.
It's a beautiful
day
in
my
neighborhood.
What's that big yellow thing?
What?
What's that big yellow thing?
It's the big yellow thing in the big blue room.
Yeah, it doesn't come out much around here, so we're not used to it.
I know it. We were out sacrificing things to it.
Well, my brother always calls Rochester summer 3 months of bad ice fishing.
Yeah. We have an incredible show for you today. Not only do we have the normal questions and comments and news and all this other cool stuff, but in the second hour of the show, we are going to get a hold. We're going to have a live interview with Mr. Tony Bove, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his last name correctly.
He'll correct us if we aren't.
He is the Renaissance man. He's a writer and a rock harmonica and vocalist and a documentarian and a lot of other things, but he has written a book called Just Say No to Microsoft, How to Ditch Microsoft and Why It's Not as Hard as You Think. That's just one book he's written along with many other books. You don't want to miss this guy. He's terrific. If you want to take a quick look, I wrote a review of the book. It's on my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Thank you. Very nice. And you'll find that if you go to my website, you'll see a reviews tab. If you click on the reviews, it is, of course, a book, and it is the top book. So you can read my review. You can even there's a link to order the book right there. It's a terrific read, a pretty nice book. I was very impressed with it. I gave it 9 out of 10 Gutenbergs. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much. And we'll be talking to him in the second half of the show. It's going to be nice.
What's a Gutenberg?
Gutenberg is the guy who invented printing.
Yeah, but I mean,
wasn't for him, there wouldn't be books.
I never heard of a Gutenberg award.
He gets the Gutenberg.
There was actually an interesting story we heard.
Why not a Nick?
Because he gets the Gutenberg. If I'm reviewing a book, the book people get Gutenbergs. Is that a problem for you somehow?
How about a Knickerburger?
The Knickerburger?
I don't know. Something else unique.
There was apparently.
And that's not unique enough for you?
No.
There's apparently a story that when Gutenberg invented the printing press, the guy across the street was a scribe and was real mad about putting all these people out of work. So, you know, unemployment problems back in the 1600s. Yeah. And so he wrote this huge manifesto on the importance of scribes and why we should keep our scribes. Unfortunately, in order to get his book out to enough people, he had to have it printed.
By Gutenberg. See, this is the thing. If I'm reviewing a gadget, they get Goldbergs. 9 out of 10 Goldbergs for Rube Goldberg, the gadgeteer. If I'm reviewing movies, they get 9 out of 10
Goldberg.
Eastman.
Wasn't he a wrestler
Eastman
also?
Invented. So, no, different Goldberg for Pete's sake.
I think of that huge wrestler.
Of course
wrestler.
You do. When I think of Goldberg, I think of Rube Goldberg. And that's the difference between us, I guess.
Speaking of wrestlers, Hulk Hogan has his own reality show, and they had a snip on The Daily Show this week where his wife wanted to lose some weight. And instead of doing anything crazy like diet or exercise, she hired a food spirit exorcist who came through their house waving, you know, scents and oils to try to get all the bad food vibes out of the house.
I think she was doing...
instead of doing anything weird.
Poor Hulk Hogan had to stand there shaking his head and pay for it.
There are some realities that one should not be subjected to.
That's definitely one of them.
All right, now, it is Memorial Day, so before we get to the phone, I want to personally thank each and every veteran.
Alphabetical, in order.
In order. Each and every one of you, I owe you all a drink. Most of you aren't going to get one. I'll get one. I'll buy one for Dave. But
Most of the rest of you don't get one. But I want to thank each and every one of you. You put your lives on the line for the freedom of this nation, and that's a beautiful thing. So I want all of you out there to sit down for a moment and remember the veterans in your families and in your lives and say a prayer for all those who gave the ultimate sacrifice.
Because really? I mean, I've got my nephew. About. My nephew and his wife right now are stationed over in Iraq.
Right. And most importantly, say a long and sincere prayer for those who are still putting their lives on the line for us.
I forgot
every
to bring
day.
Him in. He sent me some pictures.
Ooh.
And it's unbelievable what these kids are going through over there. I mean, we hear about the bombs and everything else, but he's got these pictures, and they're called, camel spiders. And these things, no lie, have to be about just the body. Yeah. Just the body has to be a good foot long. And they're about 4 inches wide.
Yeah,
and then
if you can't find a camel, you can ride these things.
No, the thing that is...
Them's good eating.
No, these camel spiders come in, and one of the the guys in his platoon caught it, two of them, because it was nibbling on his toe. They're flesh eaters.
Excellent. Well, that's good.
I mean, here you're in the desert fighting a war, and you also got to contend with camel spiders? Ah! Unbelievable.
All right.
Well, my wife is the veteran in our family.
Uh-huh.
She got deployed as far as England during the war.
Very nice.
Hey?
Nice work if you can get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a friend who spent two tours in Vietnam at a geisha house in Japan. He had a tough life, too, but most of the vets are out there putting their lives on the line, and I personally want to thank you all. God
especially
bless
the ones
each and
over
one
there
of you.
In Iraq right now. Our thoughts go with you, yep. And you know, Godspeed yep. that you get home soon and safe.
Yep. All right. Let's go to the phones.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to Dan from Brighton. Hello, Dan. How are you? Everything does.
Could be.
Yeah, that's under tools somewhere. I'm trying to see if I have Eudora on this computer. No, I don't. Somewhere in one of the menus is a settings command. I think it's in the tools menu that lets you change all of your settings. And one of those settings is your server settings and your username and password for logging into that server. And now you said he's using Roadrunner, so that we'll talk about a problem with the Frontier email when we come back from break.
Which we're going to do shortly. So check there first, Dan. Let us know if that works. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright.
Also check your keychain utility in the utilities folder, because that's a Mac program that stores all your passwords for you. So you can delete it from there as well.
There you go. Dave Enright, Steve Ray. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
What is it?
How could you not know that?
I can't. My ears and everything else are so plugged up. Thank you. Well,
right.
My sinuses are so bad right now. I mean, I wake
he
up
can't
in the morning.
Hear himself.
Yeah, I'm having great conversations.
Well, that's important. It's 21 minutes after the hour and under powder blue skies in Rochester, New York. It's already up to 75 degrees, and what could be more exciting than that? Well, I'll tell you what could be more exciting than that. A brand new security feature from Frontier. Frontier has made a change to the way that mail goes through their servers. Spam is becoming a huge problem these days, and a lot of spam comes from people's individual systems. You download what you thought was a great song instead of paying for it, or somebody sent you what's supposed to be a real cute and funny picture or whatever all those things are about. And you end up with a virus on your system. Many, many viruses nowadays send out spam. So what Frontier is doing is protecting us all by making sure that when you send mail, you have to identify yourself to the mail server.
So no one else can hijack Frontier's mail server and use it for themselves.
Exactly.
Right. Which a lot of the other servers are already doing.
Right.
And they're just, I mean, this is not something new and innovative that they're trying to do. They're just trying to get themselves in line with the other businesses that are doing it to protect their customers.
Exactly.
The problem is, there was an issue with notification of this change.
A snafu, yeah.
Frontier emailed their entire customer base several times that this change was coming through, and apparently some people's junk mail filters might have caused it, or people didn't read the message. And so both Dave and I have been receiving dozens of calls from our customers that they can't send email, and they think there's something wrong with their computer. What it actually is you have to make a change in your email program. You have to turn on authenticated sending, which is not that big a deal. But for a lot of people who didn't get this email message, they didn't know they had to do that, so they call us up that my computer's broken, I can't send mail. Well, can you receive mail? Yeah. Well, then your computer's not broken.
Yeah, right.
So Frontier has a website you can go to get instructions on how to change your specific email program, because it's different for every email program.
And they've got them all listed there, too, and under under different environments, too.
Yeah, Linux. Both Mac and Linux and Windows for each of the different email programs.
And Steve will or already has.
Already has.
Very nice. It's put that up on our website, soundbites.org.
Yep.
Click on the links button. Click on the button that tells you that there's a... I think it's, what number is it now? Four, seven?
Four, one of those numbers. Well, the address is support.frontiernet.net/smtp, which is the simple mail transfer protocol.
Right.
And that link is on our link list. So if you have not been affected by this yet, you will be.
Only if you're a Frontier customer.
Right, for all Frontier customers.
What that means, of course, is that for Frontier customers, you will be safer. Not only will you be safer, but your machine won't be sending out email even if it is infected. So they're protecting the whole internet by doing this.
Yeah, especially if you get like the downloader. There's a couple versions there that once you get it, it more or less takes over your control of your machine.
Right.
And in the background, it's sending out stuff courtesy of your email address, and you're going to get blamed for it.
This does not affect you if you use FrontierNet's webmail interface or AOL Mail or Excite or Gmail or Hotmail or Yahoo Mail online and use their web-based interface.
The big problem came about with business Frontier customers who may not have a FrontierNet email address. We at Jesse Group have our own mail server, so we get our own mail on our jessegroup.com domain. So business Frontier DSL customers don't necessarily have a username and password.
Or they may have been given one and just simply not remember
because it was years ago when you set your DSL up. So that the business users to send email if you have business DSL through Frontier still need to make this change on your email setup. And if you don't have your FrontierNet username and password, you'll have to call Frontier. And they're experiencing larger than normal call volumes at the moment.
Well, let me say this, though. I am very impressed. They're web people get big kudos from me. If you go to that website, support.frontiernet.net/smtp for Simple Mail Transfer Protocol, you'll find two columns, one about all the not affected email clients and one with all the affected email clients. So, for example, if you're a user of Outlook Express or Outlook or Thunderbird or Eudora or any one of a half a dozen others, including Mac Entourage, Mac Mail, Pegasus Mail, Netscape, they've hit IncrediMail, they've hit all the
big
ones.
With all the good icons to, you know, that you can relate to. Just
then,
not the main.
Then there's a section in yellow. Click here, and they will give you instructions on how to fix all of this. It's very well written, very clear, with lots and lots of pictures. I personally prefer pictures, and you can see exactly where you're supposed to be, what you're supposed to be setting up. They've boxed everything in red. Real nice job. Kudos to the folks who set that particular set of pages up. We've got a couple people on the line. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with all of them, with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco, and you on the greatest computer show in the known universe at 27 minutes after the hour under lapis lazuli skies. here in Rochester, New York. We're up to 75 degrees for those of you who are not outside in your little monokinis soaking up the rays and are instead actually listening to us, although of course you can do both at the same time. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites, only on 1180 WHAM.
Tom Wall,
Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Barry. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I got a video iPod, and I've only had it for a little over a week, and I'm now able to make it work to download from iTunes some TV shows which I really like the Discovery Channel. Now, here's the deal. The files are only 200K in size. They look great on my video iPod. I would like to be able to run them on the television set, and I called in last week, and I understand I can get a cable to connect my iPod to my TV set, but with such a small file, and each one of these programs is 45 minutes long because it's a Discovery chapter, how good will that look on my television set? And I'd like to know that before I buy the cable.
I think you're looking at the wrong file. Movie files are generally a couple hundred megs.
Yeah.
So maybe you're seeing 200 megs, not 200K.
No, I really am only seeing 200K. I downloaded them from iTunes. They cost $1.99
right.
per session. But really, I just now, before I even started talking to you, I looked at the size of the files, and one's 197K, one's 240K. They're MPEG-4s. But they're only that small.
They can't be. A song file is 4 megs. A movie file has got to be 100 megs.
Yeah. You know, now that you say that, I understand what you're saying, and that makes sense. But what you do is if you right-click on the file in iTunes, you can see where that file is stored. I'm running Windows.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it right now, and it says 199,209K.
Right.
Yes,
that's 199,000K, which is 199 megs.
Oh.
Yeah.
There you go.
You missed a prefix there. Yeah.
That's a comma, not a period.
So that's right. That's a 200 meg file.
Oh,
now,
okay.
Yes.
So now my question is, okay.
Yeah, the resolution will be a little bitty on a television.
He means you'll be able to see the
grain.
Bits and grains.
Well, and it also depends on how big the TV is. You know,
well,
a 13-inch TV you won't notice. On a 30-inch TV, you might.
27-inch TV?
I got a 27-inch.
Yeah. You'll notice it.
You'll probably mm-hmm. notice it. Now,
yeah.
I record TV shows myself, and I generally encode them at double size. So when you view them on the iPod, they look good, and when you view them on TV, they look good. But they end up being 800 megs.
Yeah, but I don't have that choice when I'm downloading.
Right.
No, not the ones you buy online. The ones you can encode yourself from your own camera or your own video recorder.
Right.
Now, when we record, we have a digital tuner box on our computer in our wonderful iLiving room. At our store in Victor, that you can record television on your iLiving room and then put it on your iPod. a full
and never
hour.
Go out in the real world and become an idiot.
Right,
yeah, right.
A full.
I think he needs to get another job.
A full hour of high definition full screen television show is about 8 gigabytes. So I compress that to my iPod. I get about a 90% compression to get it under 1 gigabyte. It looks pretty good on the television. And
okay,
that's encoding at double size
wait
for
a minute.
Things
so
I do manually.
Give me the bottom line here.
They'll look okay.
They will look okay.
Yes.
No, the better thing is just get a VCR.
Yeah, a DVR.
Or a DVR.
But it'll look fine, Barry. It won't look incredible. It's not going to be DVD quality, but it's certainly going to be VCR quality.
What's wrong with a VCR?
I didn't say there was anything wrong with it.
I mean, you're using...
Assuming you can find one anymore.
Well, that's actually been an argument.
You get to pay for it in like clams and rocks and stuff now. They have other Oh, for Pete's sake.
Well, that's been one of the
arguments.
Yeah, but it's cheap.
Yeah, they are cheap.
That's been one of the arguments about the music store is that you buy your TV episodes for $1.99 each, or you can buy a DVD of the entire series for $20 Depending on what series, some of the TV series are $100 or more, so $2 an episode isn't bad.
Right.
But that's the argument. I can go out and buy the DVD, get the commentaries and stuff. The neat thing
and much higher quality
and much higher quality off a DVD. But then it takes hours to re-encode it for your iPod if you want to watch it on your iPod anyway. The really neat thing about the iTunes Music.
No, but seriously, I'm sorry. I understand how wonderful and cool and sexy and desirable an iPod is. But when I want to watch something, I actually want to be able to see it. Yeah. Well, I don't want to look at a couple of little pixels running around on the screen.
That's because you're the driver. For the other kids in the car, watching it on the iPod screen isn't bad. Long commutes and whatnot.
No, I'd still rather buy them a little DVD player, and they can see it at three times.
Right,
What's wrong with reading a book?
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I get sick when I read a book in the car. Especially when I'm driving, but
the really
neat thing about the iTunes Store is that the TV shows are posted the day after they air. And now that most of the series have gone for their season finale, that's not as big an issue. But a lot of the old TV shows are available now, so the new TV show is available online the day after the air.
Can I get my mother the car?
Car 54, I think, is available.
Can I get the Sandy Duncan show?
Some of the discount DVDs. And thank you, Rob. Now I lost my train of thought. You can also watch the videos on your computer. You don't have to transfer them to the iPod. But it's also really neat, some of the video podcasts that are coming out now.
Now that makes sense.
I've been subscribing to a science fiction show, escapepod.org. And every week they come out with a new sci-fi short story. And right now they're going through the Hugo nominees because the Worldcon is coming up in August, and that's where all the science fiction stories are going to go. And actually, there's a really, really cute movie. If you're into World of Warcraft, there's a movie on the internet. Do a search for the internet. The internet is for porn. Warcraft. And it's this Broadway musical done with puppets. And someone took the music and made a Warcraft movie using the Warcraft characters.
Cool. There's a lot of Warcraft movies out.
Yep.
The whole Red versus Blue series from Halo.
I mean, so now they're doing the same thing with Warcraft. Yeah. And so you can encode those videos for your iPod and then take it on the go.
All right. We've spent way, way too much time talking about video on a tiny little...
Show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, I'm sure you've all heard of this, but happy Memorial Day, of course. The Veterans Affairs warns about a massive privacy breach. 26.5 million records of veterans and their families were on a laptop some jamoke took home apparently regularly.
Yep.
And then the thing was stolen. 26.5 million records, social security numbers, names, dates of birth. We could be looking at a huge violation of privacy. And it could be a huge identity theft
thing. Well, hopefully whoever got it doesn't realize what's
in it. Well, he does now. They've only been talking about it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on the news.
Yeah, but you don't know how many laptops in the course of a day are stolen. I mean, right
or misplaced.
Now, yeah, I mean, it's so high right now, the theft of laptops, because all these cafes and everything else. I mean... You know, that's what I tell folks even around here.
I cannot believe how many times I watch somebody in an internet cafe get up and walk to the counter, leaving their laptop just sitting there. And I'm thinking,
at the other end of the store, and all they got to do is walk in, quick grab it, and back out the door.
If I had two good knees, I'd be out the door with that thing so fast nobody'd know what happened.
Well, that's what they're running into. I mean, literally. Because, like you say, folks are down at the other end, and they're putting their order in, so their back is to usually the entrance where their computer is. And people are usually so engulfed in, you know, what they're doing that they're sitting there typing away. They have somebody else walked in, just... looked at that computer, grabbed it, and walked out the
door.
We
see it all the time at RIT, students in the dorms. It's incredibly easy. You walk into somebody's dorm room, unplug everything, throw the laptop in your bag, and you're gone.
Yep.
You know, it's just 2 minutes of work, and then to get that thing running again, it's $30 or $40 for Universal Power Supply down at one of the superstores.
Yep.
Who wouldn't do that?
Exactly. And oh well, they just wipe out the operating system if you know it's password protected,
right?
And just start over fresh.
Right. It's incredibly easy, ludicrously simple to steal. You need to be more careful. But at any rate, the Veterans Affairs Commission, they had, this is not the last time, the Department of Veteran Affairs, excuse me, this is not the first time that they've had security problems. There's an annual evaluation required of all federal agencies by the Federal Information Security Management Act of 2002, and the VA has failed to meet the standards set by law, receiving an F for 4 out of 5 years that the audit has been conducted. So they're not doing very well. They also waited like forever to tell people that this had happened. I'm not entirely certain. And, you know, for example, the folks who are members of the Vietnam Veterans of America, they're saying they don't know what to tell people. They have no idea. Of course, it wasn't them that lost it.
No.
They don't know what to tell their membership because the government truly hasn't told them much of anything at all. At any rate, if you are a veteran... again, thank you and happy Memorial Day. Please be very careful. Take a look at everything.
Keep an eye on your credit reports,
any credit card activity
in there. Just don't, you know, just, oh, this is what I owe and pay it. You know, kind of scrutinize it. Yeah.
Pay attention.
And maybe use some of the internet login options for credit cards and banks to check your balances every couple of days or so. Don't wait for it at the end of the month.
Right. All right, our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Fred. What's your question?
Today, I have a question about Safari on the Macintosh. I want to find out if it's possible for the administrator to disable the clear history function for the users.
There is a parental control option that lets you control what websites people are allowed to go to, and I think it does limit what clearing and setting options that the other user has as well.
Okay. Yeah, I did spot that, but I wanted to trust but verify as Reagan said. All right, thanks guys.
All right, thank you. Trust but verify. Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. All right, our next caller is Hank from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Hank. What's your question?
I've got a obnoxious program called Real Player.
Yes, you do.
That I use periodically. So I'd like to have it on the machine, but I'd like not to start it every time I start up the machine. Is that possible?
Yeah, you can just go in. Are you running Windows XP?
Yeah, XP Home.
Yeah, if you go into, if you go down to Start, go to Run, click on the Run and type in msconfig. And then the last tab over is the startup bar tab. In there, you'll see the listing of Real Player. And you can just uncheck it, and then that way when the machine starts up, it will automatically start it.
So there's also a program called Real Player, Real Alternative. It lets you play real media files without having to install the Real Player
program.
Player. I guess
because real kind of likes to take over everything and is pretty nasty, and that assumes you always want to run it, so it loads itself all the time at startup.
All right,
the Mac version is a little better than that. It doesn't take over your system quite so bad.
What was the name of that alternative? To
Real Alternative. And you can find it. Steve's going to take a look and put
I think
up
we
a
already
link
have it.
If it isn't up there already. But Real Alternative is an alternative to Real Player. And I think you'll find you can uninstall Real, install this, follow the instructions, and you should be fine. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. It's 49 minutes after the hour, and we'll be back shortly on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Sound Bites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, under cerulean skies here in Rochester, New York, it's 77 degrees, gone up 2 degrees since the last time we talked about this. Very nice. It's a beautiful day in my neighborhood.
Yep.
And we've got lots of interesting things to talk about. We're just a very short time from talking to Mr. Tony Bove. But before we do that, those of you who are Ubuntu fans should know that the release candidate of Ubuntu, Kubuntu, and Edubuntu, 6.06 LTS, or as most of us know it, Dapper Drake, has been released. This is the release candidate. It's an installable live desktop CD, server images, alternate text mode install CDs, an upgrade wizard for users of the current stable release. The release candidate is complete, stable, and suitable for testing, but the real one won't be out until June, so you may wanna wait there. The whole idea is this is to solicit one last round of testing before the final release.
You might want to explain to our new listeners out there what Ubuntu is.
Ubuntu is a version of Linux, an alternate and free operating system. I'm running Ubuntu on this laptop in front of me, and I'm doing everything I normally do under Windows, and it's all free. Free word processing, spreadsheet, database, 15,000 programs I can run on this thing. What's interesting is this is the LTS release. LTS stands for long term support. The Ubuntu group has said that they will support this for 3 years on the desktop and 5 years on servers. So if you've been hesitating about jumping to Linux, if you've been thinking about it but wondering, can you get any support? Is this thing going to live? Is what's going to happen to it? The Ubuntu group is backed by a guy named Mark Shuttlesworth, who's a multimillionaire, and certainly he's not going away any day soon. So you've got 3 years on the desktop, 5 years on the server with this particular release. You can download a live CD, or you will be able to come June. You'll be able to download a live CD. And try it out without damaging or harming your Windows machine in any way. And of course, the Ubuntu folks will send out free CDs to simply people who ask for it. And if you want to ask for it, you can go to ubuntu.com and check that all out. It's a pretty nifty product, and I'm impressed with it. Of all of the versions I've tried, and there are some very good ones out there. The one I like best so far, at least, is Ubuntu. I'm very impressed. Back to the phones. Jim from Brockport, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Well, got kind of a strange question here. Two computer guys give me an answer, and I want to verify it.
So. Oh, here we go.
Well, you're going to get three more answers.
Yep. Exactly. Four if Rob chimes in.
There you go. I wake up last Saturday morning. I come down into the office to check email, do my usual routine. The desktop has been rearranged. Missing our Outlook Express.
That's a good thing.
Internet Explorer. I know. Yeah, I'm giving you a lot of ammunition here. I know. And I'm missing my iTunes library, my address book, all my email accounts they're all gone.
Now, sounds like someone created a new username.
This and gone through the procedures and said, we don't know how these files could come up missing.
It sounds like someone created a new username and you now have new empty folders.
Who else is using this machine?
Nobody. Well, my wife or occasional email, but there's no kids going in there and changing things and like that.
All right. What you might want to try to do, I mean, this is just a thing to try, is if you go into, go down to Start, go to Programs, go to Accessory System Tools, and then there's System Restore.
Yeah, which I have turned off, according to you folks.
Right. You didn't turn it back on?
One of the guys did, and I turned it back off.
They're gone.
All right.
See, because what I was going to say, in there we tell you to turn it back, you know, turn it on, and you would have had a restore point from yesterday or even back a week to restart to.
So,
but those are all gone now.
When he turns system restore back on, that's when it wrote over everything that's...
Well, when you turn it off to do this, the spyware cleaning, it deletes all the old restore points, which are good because that's where spyware and viruses can hide.
Absolutely.
And when you're done cleaning, you can turn that back on to give you the safety net of being able to revert to a restore point when something goes wrong.
Okay, so these are gone, and it's time to start all over and just...
Well, I'm not sure where they're gone to.
Check your user's control panel. Make sure you don't have a new user by mistake.
Okay.
And look in your user's folder to make sure those documents aren't there. Now, the iTunes library should be in a music folder, and I've seen people accidentally drag that music folder into another folder.
Yeah, but
so
since
iTunes
he lost Outlook and the rest,
yeah.
What I would do is reinstall Windows over Windows. It won't hurt anything,
okay,
but it'll straighten out your problem most likely with Explorer and Outlook Express.
Okay.
Well, now there's also one other thing. If you were to, and I don't remember where this is, if you right-click on Start, that's not where it is. You can hide.
Right, yeah, right-click on the desktop, bring up Properties.
Desktop. There you go.
And then bring up Advanced Settings. It allows you to determine what icons appear on the desktop.
They may have simply been turned off, and I don't know by whom. So do that.
Yeah. Well, if you just right-click and it goes Arrange Icons. And it says, there's a box there that says Show Desktop Icons.
Right, but if you go to Properties, you can also pick which ones you can see.
Yeah.
And that will help you. We got to go. We're going to take a quick break. Rob Jason's in with the news and sports and all the good stuff. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton. Don't forget, when we come back, we're going to hopefully talk to Tony Bove, who wrote a great book called Just Say No to Microsoft, and we'll be back in just a few minutes on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180 or *1180. A free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And he's Rob Linton. He's talking to somebody on the phone right now. It is 6 minutes after the hour, 76 degrees under what I think you would have to agree are eggshell blue skies here in Rochester, New York. We're having a great time on the air here, and we've had a bunch of calls and a bunch of interesting stuff that we've talked about. We're going to hopefully get hold of Tony Bove shortly, but in the meantime, we'll be taking a couple more calls. First, last week, let's talk a little bit about what goes on at our website. That would be soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we have a poll. This week's poll was about last week's poll. Let's talk about last week's poll first. Last week's poll was about internet neutrality. As we know, they were talking about internet neutrality and what should be done about that. Well, our poll was the internet should be neutral. It was very simple, yes or no choice. 288 of you voted. Thank you very much. And 95% of you said yes. 5% said no. Now, what internet neutrality means is that everybody would be the same. You wouldn't be able to charge somebody more for certain services or whatever. I'm delighted to say that the House Committee on the Judiciary has approved the Internet Freedom and Non-Discrimination Act, H.R. 5417, in a vote of 20 to 12. This particular bill would make it an antitrust violation to block, impair, discriminate, or interfere with anyone's services or applications or content. If a provider were offer, for example, to increase your VoIP performance, the bill would require those providers to prioritize or offer enhanced quality or service to all VoIP customers. So it's pretty nice. This one's been dubbed the strict net neutrality bill. It not only outlaws service degradation, but would also prevent service from providers from selling quality of service to customers. Opponents continue to insist that net neutrality is a non-issue. Yeah, right. The fate of this bill, unfortunately, is not incredibly clear. There are two competing bills now vying for the attention on the House floor. H.R. 5252, the Communications Opportunity Promotion and Enhancement Act, is seen by proponents of net neutrality as being just a little too weak.
When you call it opportunity enhancement, it sounds good.
Yeah, right. It always sounds good, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. So there's two bills in the House, 5417 and 5252. To make matters more confusing, the vote in the House Committee on the Judiciary may also have been affected by a contest between that committee and the Energy and Commerce Committee to see who has authority over this. And it still isn't done because there's a different one in the Senate, and they have to come to. It's just we're nowhere near the end, but one victory has been has been gotten, so we're good for that. We this week's poll actually is about just saying no to Microsoft. Hopefully, again, we'll have Mr. Tony Bove on the line shortly. Rob is clearly not doing a darn thing to get him, but at the moment, but he will be. He's already made several phone calls. I just caught you drinking your soda.
What do you want me to do? You want me to drive over to his house?
Could you take
him
out? You got the bike. Get the bike out. All right. This week's poll is about just saying no to Microsoft, and the choices are the idea being that you could replace Microsoft products with other things. And our choices this week are: I've said no to Microsoft with nothing, one application, two applications, three or more applications, the Linux or the Macintosh. So far, we have 70 votes registered. The clear winner with 20 votes so far is three or more applications. Followed by the Linux, followed by nothing, followed by the Macintosh, two applications and one application. So I'm very proud of each and every one of you. When you're done voting in the poll, take a look at the yellow box underneath. Click on Give Us Your Opinion, and it will take you to my website at AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. And you can then enter more of an opinion. And the question this week is, what was your epiphany moment in saying no to Microsoft? So far, nobody's actually answered the question, but seven people have actually entered a comment. So that's a very nice thing to do. While you're there, please take a look around at my website. In particular, click on the Reviews tab. And the Reviews tab will take you to my sets of reviews, if I clicked on the right tab. I am just restarting it, so there's a bunch of stuff that isn't there anymore. But if you click on Books, you'll find two reviews, the top one of which is Just Say No to Microsoft. How to Ditch Microsoft and Why It's Not as Hard as You Think. I gave it 9 out of 10 Gutenbergs. Yes, Gutenbergs. And I talk about the book itself and what I felt about them and how much I liked it. And
it's your website. Why not do Nickenbergs?
And there's a link because the movies are Eastman's and books are Gutenbergs. And gadgets are
Nickenbergs.
And one Nick is enough for all of us.
And one Nick is more than enough for all of us. There's also a link there to the to Amazon where you can buy it at a somewhat reduced price. So check all that out. And as long as you're there, take a look around my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And see what you think, and then come back to our website, join us in the forum, do all that stuff. I believe we have Mr. Bove on the line even as we speak. What could be more exciting than this? Tony Bove, welcome to Soundbites.
Hello.
Have I pronounced your last name correctly?
No, it's Tony Bove.
Bove, I apologize. I've been an idiot for 2 weeks. last names are hard, and I specifically prefer Francesco to Francesco, so I should have gotten that right. but welcome to the show. I must tell you, I loved your book.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend of mine saw me reading it and said, what is this, somebody who used to work at Microsoft and quit? And I explained, no, that this is a completely different. Basically, the book is a reasoned plea to ditch Microsoft to keep your system and your data and your identity as safe as possible. In this particular book, I have to tell you, when I first looked at this, I honestly thought, well, here we are, yet one more anti-Microsoft screed. And I didn't particularly feel like I needed to read this because, frankly, I do enough of that. But in fact, it's very reasoned. It's a case-by-case basis. You show a methodology for replacing various Microsoft products, everything up to and including the operating system. It's a great book. Please tell us a little bit about what brought you to write it.
Well, I've been in the computer industry for a long time, and I've used every kind of computer you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to 1976. So I've really had a lot of experience with both Microsoft operating systems, their alternatives, all their applications. And I've also experienced what I call the Microsoft lock-in, where you basically rely on Microsoft software so much that you basically can't get away from it.
Right.
Now, through the 80s and certainly through the 80s, I had much more of an alternative experience than I had in the 90s. In the 80s, we were able to use a variety of computers running the same operating system. It was called CPM.
Yeah, I started on CPM on, on Deck Rainbows.
Now, some people could argue this, but I believe we had a lot of flexibility, probably more flexibility and more application compatibility in the CPM era than we have in the DOS and Microsoft Windows era, largely because you could have a lot of different hardware products that worked regardless of the, you could have, instead of having PC clones where every clone is essentially the same configuration of hardware, you could have a lot of different things that work together. You could have anything from an Osborne to a K-Pro to a multi-user CompuPro. I don't know if you remember those.
Yeah. I sold them.
All different sizes, all different types. And there was what I call a loosely what the industry calls a loosely coupled interface between the operating system, the applications, and the users.
Right.
And although there were very few file standards, and they certainly didn't cover the kinds of media types we use today, it was getting there. You know, I mean, we were working on being able to transfer word processing files from one program to another. All that stuff was going on.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of innovation. In fact, that kind of innovation spurred Apple to go beyond the Apple II into the Mac. But what happened in the mid-80s, and no one really saw it coming, another competitor, essentially, was Microsoft. And in the mid-80s, that was fine. By the time of the mid-90s, that wasn't so cool because you basically had a field of PCs, clones, all based on the same design. That's not really choice.
Right.
You know, Henry Ford said you could have any color Model T as long as it was black.
Yeah.
You know, we were told you could have any kind of PC you want as long as it looks exactly like a Compaq.
But Apple's running into that now with their Mac Mini. People don't believe it's a real computer because it's so small. It's not a giant tower because that's what we've been used to for 30 years.
Right.
Well, you know, there's that. There's the look of it, but there's also the fact that it has to have exactly the same kind of hardware. It has to run exactly the same operating system, the same BIOS that connects the operating system to the hardware. There is no real choice along those levels, and less so as you move more into Microsoft's applications, because then you find that you're sending Word docs, Excel docs to people, or they're sending them to you, and you have no choice, but you think you have no choice, but to use Microsoft's applications.
Right.
But it's not true. The point of the book is it's not true. I never really got locked in. And when people were telling me, and I've always been using PCs and Macs, and I had a K-Pro and Osborne, and it goes on. People were always asking me what kind of computer to buy. After so many years in the industry, I decided I better just write this book.
Yeah.
Now, I have been writing a lot of books.
Yeah, you wrote the whole iSeries.
Yeah.
Right? iPod, iTunes, iLife.
I have the iPod for Dummies. I go way back, though. I wrote the first Adobe Illustrator book. I wrote the first book about Macromind Director. I wrote the first book about CPM.
Oh. Really?
Back in the days.
Yes, 1980. So,
cool. I used to sell K-Pro Pertec. The little orange toaster with the S100 bus. What a great machine.
Remember the CPM handbook?
Yes.
Published by Cybex.
That was you?
That was you?
Now I'm actually impressed.
The World's Essential Guide to CPM.
Yes.
Boy, now you're making me remember all the way back.
Yeah, but those are the good days, though. I mean, that's when you could really bang around on a computer and you had full control.
And you had to learn how to program because that's almost all there was to do.
Yeah.
Well, I think the most important thing was that there wasn't a sinister presence driving the business.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, amen to that.
I want to address the issue of Microsoft bashing because, really, I'm never really engaged in that much, except as jokingly and humorously. But because I have people who work there, I've even done contract work for Microsoft. This is not a company that's evil or its people are not evil. These are company and people that are motivated by profit, and what they have is a situation where they are kind of locked in themselves. They cannot, they can't sit there and reduce the amount of revenue they're getting from the Microsoft Office applications and essentially their revenue streams in order to completely reinvent the company, which is what they have to do.
Right. And Apple actually bit the bullet, rolled up their sleeves, and did it. And boy, were they vilified for doing it.
Absolutely. And right now, I mean, no matter how you look at it, Apple has taken risks and is doing well in the stock market.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Microsoft is not taking risks. It's not doing as well in the stock market. And you can say they both have a lot of cash. They both could be spending money and taking risks. That's the whole point.
Well, Microsoft is almost an envious company to other companies because who wouldn't like a 90% market share?
Yeah, the problem is where do they grow from here?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the real problem. And now what we have to remember in general is that Microsoft is a publicly held company. And therefore, who are their customers? Their customers are their stockholders. What's the product they deliver? Us.
Well, there's a problem in that because Apple also has the same issue.
Stockholders.
And I mean, every good company. But these companies, I guess it's a difference of leadership. We're talking about, in the case of Apple, we're talking about a company that's blindly going to follow its leader, wherever Steve Jobs wants to go.
Right. If Steve Jobs said that bridge, jump off that bridge, there'd be millions of Mac people just lining up.
So, I mean, the shareholders might be upset, some of them, but others are probably will sit there and go, well, wait a minute, let's see what he's going to do.
Right. But the point is that Apple was willing to ignore the short term for the long term.
Exactly.
And that took an incredible amount of guts, and Microsoft doesn't seem to have it.
They don't get it.
And someone also could argue that, well, Apple has it easy because they don't have this market share to worry about, that they don't have the installed base of customers, that they have to make sure that all the older stuff supposedly works on the new system. Well, in fact, there's a lot of misinformation there because although Microsoft does try to make a lot of things work on a wide variety of hardware platforms, using making sure that all this existing technologies work with it, then they make something that doesn't quite work. So you have to leapfrog to the new thing anyway.
Right. Well, Apple has made four major shifts in architecture in their 30 years. We're going through one now, the switch from PowerPC to Intel. Your old software doesn't work very well on the new computers.
Right.
So and Apple has survived these transitions.
It has to. We have to. The point is that these transitions have to happen. Without them, the industry doesn't grow. Without them, the industry doesn't evolve.
All right, listen, we got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and Rob Linton, Tony Bove, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers, but then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, under Alice blue but hazy skies in Rochester, New York, it's 76 degrees. We are talking to Tony Bove, who wrote a terrific book called Just Say No to Microsoft, How to Ditch Microsoft, and Why It's Not as Hard as You Think. Now, I must tell you, Mr. Bove, you're speaking to the choir here. You're preaching to the choir. But I loved this book. I normally, when I read a book like this, I dog-ear pages. I underline things. Well, I stopped doing it because I would have dog-eared every stinking page. There's gems on every single one of these pages. I'm very impressed by this book. What was the hardest part about writing this book?
Selling it. Actually, the hardest part.
Really? Okay, you win. That would be the hardest part of any book.
Actually, yeah, because the book like this, it's very difficult to undertake this without at least getting a publisher to, not necessarily to pay in advance, but at least to come up with a plan to sell it. Because the problem with a book like this, what is it? Is it a how-to book or is it a business book? And so I really dislike those kinds of categories and pigeonholing things. I have been writing how-to books for years that they basically get filed on the bookshelf under the title of the product. So a Macromedia Director book would be under M for Macromedia Director and whatnot. So when you get Just Say No to Microsoft, where do you put it on the bookshelf?
Right.
Yeah. So Jays. Well, there's also the, you know, what you were mentioning before the break is that there's such a momentum that, it, you know, Nick has said for years he used to sell Macintoshes and he switched over to supporting PCs because there's more money to be made.
Right.
Because there's more of them. They break down easier. There's more money to be made selling Windows books because there's more Windows machines. So you probably had a huge momentum against you to begin with.
To a certain extent. There's also a disproportionate number of MacBooks to Mac users. In other words, there are more MacBooks than you would think.
Right. Yeah.
And there's a reason for that too, I believe. And I think that has to do with people who buy, especially people who want a more customized experience with a computer, are going to tend towards buying either a Mac or they're going to buy a Power Windows machine, and they're going to buy books to find out how to learn how to use it more effectively,
right?
To find out all the tricks and tips and to impress their friends, whatever, to do their jobs better. And I think that Mac users generally have more customizable options, and the typical Mac user learns more about how to use this machine than a typical Windows user.
Yep.
Right, and a typical Linux user knows all about using his or her machine.
Yeah, and I have to say, I think that that's because they have to.
Yeah.
In the Linux, and then there are a lot of books about Linux. In the Linux world, I think it's evolving so quickly, you really have to actually read stuff in order to keep up with what's going on.
Right.
In the Windows world, nothing seems to be happening. If anything happens in the Windows world, there's so much fanfare about it. There's a 9-month beta program or something.
Yeah.
And by the time Microsoft actually ships a product, everybody's used it.
Yeah. Well, right. Well, let's take a look at things like Arrow, which the Sun Desktop did 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much everything, we've joked about this for years. Every time Microsoft talks about a new product, I'll say something like, now, I know you Mac people have been using it for years, but thank God Microsoft finally invented it.
Yes.
You know, that sort of thing happens all the time.
Well, remember before Windows came out, there was a product by Xerox called Gem?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, yeah, it wasn't actually by Xerox, but yes.
Right.
And that's a different story.
Xerox Global View years before that. I ran that on Sun IPXs.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, way back then, I think the situation was that a number of companies seized the opportunity to do a graphical interface. Gem was around actually before the Macintosh.
Yep.
Yeah.
And there was even some talk that, you know, a little bit of Gem was pillaged for the Mac. That's probably true. We all stood on the shoulders of giants, as they
right.
say.
Yeah. Right. But, there's a difference between pillaged and found this to be a really great idea and emulated it.
Well, I don't know. That's a good point. I mean, when Microsoft and Apple had their big lawsuit over the size of the trash can icon,
you're right.
you get to a point where these few pixels do mean a difference. But I guess pillaged is a strong word. But what you have is Steve Jobs going into Xerox and looking around and going, wow, I can do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So I don't even think he bought a Xerox machine and brought it home first to reverse engineer it. I just think he walked in the lab, looked at it, and said, we're doing this.
Well, there's a great possibly apocryphal story about the fact that they spent months trying to figure out how to do overlapping windows because they thought they'd seen it on the Star.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't there. Right?
And it wasn't there.
Yeah, and we interviewed Bill Atkinson about that, and he said... Yeah, he spent months doing all that, and then they went to ask the Star guys how they did it, and we said, we don't.
Yeah, is our solution like yours? And they said, nah, no, we don't do it, so no. But yeah, I got to say, this book is incredible, folks. Remember the name of the book, Just Say No to Microsoft, How to Ditch Microsoft and Why It's Not as Hard as You Think. And the point behind this book, it's not an anti-Microsoft screed. It's all about being able to do what you want to do, faster and easier, often free, without having to intertwine things with each other the way Microsoft has done.
Yeah, I think a good point to make here, and it's been said that, you know, why would you not want to use Microsoft? They're good products. Well, the point to make here is that once you've gotten involved in a lot of these Microsoft applications, especially, and let's say you're still going to stay on Windows. Well, you're involved in Word or Excel, and you're essentially locked into those applications.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, there are alternatives, you just don't know about them, that would, number one, work the same way, number two, be less, far less expensive at the outset, and because and in many cases free, and number three, the upgrade path is also free.
Yeah, when we tell people that, yeah, you need, they tell us they want to buy Word and Excel, we tell them it's $400 for the standard office suite, they go, what?
And Open Office is
free.
It's free,
oh, by the way.
And I've heard criticism saying, yeah, well, you can get Microsoft Office for like $120, $130, $140. Okay, fine. That's this year. Next year, when they upgrade the file format,
right,
you're going to have to buy a new version.
Yep.
That's buy a new version, not upgrade for free.
Right, right. Yeah, and I'll tell you, I love to be able to click a couple of buttons and upgrade every single application on my Linux box to the newest, greatest version and never have to think about it again.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the reasons why I wrote this book, this is an important point, I think, and that is that despite the, it's not about Microsoft bashing, and it's not a how-to book, so to speak, but it does describe the software that you're using and why it locks you in and why there could be problems with it. And it often presents the alternatives that are free and some that are commercial.
Yep, yep.
It's not only about saving money. It's not only about being able to use products other than Microsoft. It's also knowing about the architecture of your machine a little bit more. It's about knowing how it's put together, how the software works together, and why, for example, Microsoft Windows is so vulnerable to all kinds of badware, malware, as we call
right,
it, viruses,
right, yeah.
Worms. I think the spyware and adware is just as bad.
Well, yeah, I put together a site called the Security Tango that basically shows a step-by-step way to clean your machine off. And I call it a tango because if you miss a step, it's not a tango anymore. You're just stumbling around.
Right.
People say to me, well, is there a Macintosh version of this? Well, no, you don't need one. Is there a Linux version? No, you don't need one. It's all about Microsoft.
And there is a good reason for that. And it's not just that Windows as a legacy system, there are certain problems with it that are vulnerabilities that are very difficult to get around. They can be patched, but then you lose some tiny bit of functionality. To give you an example, if you really want to avoid, just recently, if you want to avoid any kind of Word document virus, Microsoft now says you can operate Word in safe mode or something.
Yeah, right, right.
And what was your thing a couple of weeks ago? Don't bother cleaning viruses and spyware. Just erase your hard drive and start over.
Yeah,
right.
And there's another idea. It's the Windows Media Player, which reports back or has the capability of reporting back to Microsoft's databases what you're playing on CD and DVD.
Yeah, I have a number of friends who do HIPAA. They work, they work in hospitals and they have to deal with HIPAA. And I say to them all the time, how do you reconcile HIPAA with an operating system that automatically reports back to what's on your hard drive, and Microsoft reserves the right to give that information to third parties?
Yeah.
And the answer I always invariably get back is, shut up.
Yeah.
Okay.
We don't want to look at the vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there is, the alternative is no more Microsoft. And people are afraid of that.
Well, I actually don't believe that's the alternative. I actually believe that Microsoft will maybe drag kicking and screaming into the next era. But I think that it's quite possible a company could easily reinvent itself as either two or possibly three companies.
Right. But I don't know that they ever will. I mean, Europe has been trying to get them to do that.
Well, yeah. I think it's a wise move. In fact, if I worked at Microsoft, I'd be suggesting it myself.
Yep.
Because I think that the services side needs to have its own platform. This is MSN and the whole services or
yep.
architecture is
yep.
happening. I think Windows has to be moved into maintenance mode and maintained, but that's it. I think the applications, Word and Office, need to be turned into free web services with advertising supported, all this stuff. There's a lot of innovation that's possible, but I think they're kind of hung up in their own problems. The company is catering essentially to its revenue streams.
Yep, yep, that's exactly right. All right, listen, we Mr. Beauvais, thank you so
thank
much
you for your
this
time
was,
today.
This was wonderful. Thank you. The book is called "Just Say No to Microsoft: How to Ditch Microsoft and Why It's Not as Tui, Not As Hard As You Think by Tony Beauvais. It's available from No Starch Press. We have a link on my website, asknick.com. Mr. Beauvais, thank you once again.
Yes, thank
this
you, sir.
This was great.
All right, thank you.
Thank you so much. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco at 37 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Talk you can understand. It's Soundbites, America's longest-running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, under cyan skies, a little haze, it's Soundbites. We are, I want to thank once again Tony Beauvais for taking the time to speak with us. Very interesting, great book. But we're back to the phones now, and our next caller is Bill from Atlanta, New York. Atlanta, where's Atlanta, New York, Bill?
Between Naples and Wayland.
Oh, there you go.
Not too far away.
Not that far at all.
Yeah.
My question is about an old laptop I've got, an old Compaq running Windows 95. If I take that off and put Linux on it, will it be more nimble, or is it old and clunky because the hardware is old and clunky?
It's possible that it will be a little more nimble depending on what graphics front end you run. How much RAM does this thing have?
Offhand, I don't know. It was a curbside acquisition.
Yeah.
Probably 64 meg.
If it's 64 meg or more, there are a couple of versions of Linux that you might want to take a look at. There's one called Damn Small Linux. That's all one word. There's another called Puppy Linux. That you might find are good for old machines. The real problem is the speed of the machine, the amount of RAM, the speed of the hard drive. You're never going to change those, no matter what else you run,
because the hardware is old and clunky.
Because the hardware is old and clunky. On the other hand, what a great toy to learn Linux
to
on, as long as you're aware that it's not going to be a whole lot faster.
I mean, just to get the experience that, you know, maybe down the road if you get another machine, here you got this laptop that you can tote around with you, put it on there, get the experience, and, oh, well, if it crashes, just start over again.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I would. That's the ideal way to do it.
You lose nothing and you have a little fun.
And I want you to know that I called in before I knew the subject that Mr. Beauvais was going to talk about.
Yeah. Yes, and thank you for holding. I appreciate
that.
Yeah,
he held 48 minutes.
I'll let you guess how I'd vote in the survey.
I hope you do vote in the survey. Thank you so much, Bill.
Thank you very much.
Our next caller is John from Rochester, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm running a computer with Windows 2000 Professional. When I run SpyBot, what it comes up with is a threat found in command services. Command service, yes. So I click to repair, and it identifies three registry keys. It says it took care of one of them. After I reboot,
To rescan.
I still come up with the three registry keys. After, you know, I click to repair and it's not successful, it says it's going to close command services and that I should go to the command control panel. That's all it says. And I first don't know what the command control panel is or where it is.
Well, let's start with let's step back a step, John. Are you running the entire security tango or just SpyBot?
The absolute total security or the tango, complete tango.
All right, including shutting down your restore points and all of that stuff.
Yes.
Well, this is 2000. What I'm thinking is a lot of times you have to run SpyBot and Adware in safe mode.
Yep.
And 2000 doesn't have a safe mode, does it?
No.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it does. It does. Yeah. So you should. And are you doing it that way?
Yes, I am.
And then the other trick was to go to msconfig and turn everything off.
MSconfig is not
and
in
2000. Doesn't have it. I knew there was something.
What you got to do is you got to go into the registry.
Manually edit the registry.
Yeah.
Right. I went into the registry, and I don't see anything of suspicion.
Wait a minute.
How can you even tell?
Came up with another. If you go to our forums, There was a person under what the Soundbites guys got wrong. Somebody came up with a workaround for Windows 2000 for a utility that you could run to check the startup and all that. Check in there, you know, go into the forums and check underneath that one, and there is a utility that you can get to control what's being loaded and everything else.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Give it a shot. Let us know how you make out on that, though.
I will do so.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, that's a tricky one. I mean, it's such a great utility, it's a shame.
Yeah, right.
Well, and some of that was the positioning of Windows 2000. It was supposed to be, you know, your server OS that you'd
but
never
the thing it is, though,
touched.
It was in Windows.
Yeah.
And then they took it out, right?
And then they put it back in.
Well, I think Steve is right. People were not supposed to be using it for anything but a server.
And OS
so there
2.
Were a lot of those features.
Yeah, OS 2 was your desktop OS, and Windows 2000 was your server OS. And Microsoft and IBM fell out of that relationship.
Right. Our next caller is Bill from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
When I start my computer, it's a Dell, and you get the blue Dell picture on it. Mm-hmm. And then I get a black screen, and then in white letters, it gives me all kinds of information on the computer, what the model number is and what the RAM is and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then down at the bottom it says delete to continue.
Right.
And then I delete, and I can continue to boot. I've just tried to get rid of that thing for about 6 months now. Now I got to call somebody that knows how to do it.
That's a preference in your BIOS, whether you want to do a quick boot or you want to see the informational messages. And it depends on how the BIOS names that.
I didn't see anything that I thought said that. What does it say that...
Well, none of us are running Dells at the moment, but in the BIOS, Steve is right. It's a choice between a quick boot... fast boot or a
detailed summary or something like that.
Yeah, or a terse boot or
okay.
I don't.
All right, I'll find it then.
Yeah, it's one of those.
Yeah, it's
I'm
in
sorry.
There.
I don't have a Dell in front of me to reboot for you, but that's basically what it's done is it's doing exactly what you told it to do. Or somebody told it to do, which is show you all that stuff. We're going to take a quick break at 49 minutes after the hour. It's Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you right back with Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Back to the phones in 1 second, but first an important security announcement. Now, we know that a lot of you who listen to the show have been drafted into being the systems administrator for a small business. If you are using the enterprise version of Symantec Antivirus, that would be 10-point anything at this point, or the Symantec Client Security 3.x, there's a very serious flaw you need to update immediately. Now, Symantec stresses that this flaw does not affect any of the consumer desktop security products. So it does not affect the Norton consumer brand of products. If you're running any of the Norton programs, they have their own separate issues, but it's not this one. But if you're running any of the corporate or enterprise versions of their software, their antivirus software, you need to update immediately, if not sooner.
As an IT person, you want to stay on top of that because you could have quite a few hundred employees coming screaming at you that their machines are messed up.
You aren't kidding. Our next caller is Phil from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Phil. What's your question?
Hey, Nick and guys. Enjoy the show.
Thanks.
Just bought a new Linksys G router to replace a B vintage router. Do I just have to hook up the new one, unplug the old one, hook up the new one?
You got it.
Pretty much. The one difference that you might have to worry about is before you do that, look and see what the address range is on the old B. Usually it's 192.168.0.0 to 192.168.0.255.
Yeah.
But on the new one, it might be .1 instead of .0.
And make sure all your machines are turned off.
Right.
So that the, because you're switching routers, that it'll pick up on the new address as long as you're doing DHCP.
And
should all pick up on it, but if you've hard coded anything, for example, for a printer or whatever, you want to make sure that you're using exactly the same address range.
I don't think I've done that, but appreciate your help. Have a good weekend, guys. Yeah,
you should also think seriously about putting a password on the wireless, because it encrypts the wireless signal,
yes.
Prevents people from driving by your house from getting into your network. So it's in fact, most of the routers these days have a wizard that walks you through putting a password on it. It used to be you didn't want the companies didn't want to have to mess with teaching you stuff like that, so that you plug them in and they work. But now it's getting to be a security issue that you want to put your password on.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care, guys.
That's actually very important. We've talked before about how people can, it's called, drive-by theft of services, and you certainly don't want that. I got to talk about this. Torrent Spy. The MPAA, the Motion Picture Association of America, has been suing a lot of people because, as you know, we're all thieves. And they sued a company called Torrent Spy. Torrent Spy is a way to look at what BitTorrent things are out there. BitTorrent is a way to distribute the downloading of huge files. So, for example, if you've got an old-time radio series that's out of copyright and you want to bundle it into a torrent and download it to people, you can either have millions of people download it off your machine and bog your machine down, or you can send it out as a torrent. Each person who downloads it then serves out their piece of it. That's perfectly legal to do if it's not a copyrighted item. What Torrent Spy does is let you search out all the BitTorrents that are out there and be able to click into one and do that. Now, the MPAA is actually, apparently, according to the lawsuit from Torrent Spy, the MPAA actually hired a guy to break into Torrent Spy's computers and steal information. This will go to court at some point. We're not sure quite when, but we'll keep you informed of this. People are starting to fight back against the MPAA. They said that in July last year, the MPAA paid that hacker $15,000 for the information that he broke in and stole. We don't know, but we'll see. We'll keep you informed of what's going on here as we go along. It's just the latest chapter in an ongoing dispute between file sharers and the MPAA and the RIAA. So we'll keep you going. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank Rob Linton. I want to thank everybody who called in. In particular, I want to thank Mr. Tony Beauvais, who wrote a terrific book and gave so generously of his time to give us a very interesting interview today. Don't forget, check out soundbites.org. Check out asknick.com. Check out the Security Tango. Read my blog there. We've got an amazing amount of stuff going on the website Soundbites. We're done for another week. Back next week on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Thanks for listening.